Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. This is episode 223 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. We have an amazing guest for you today, as we always do. I love doing this twice a week. We talk to the best Magic the Gathering players in the world and get their stories, their tips, their tricks, what they do to be a rock star at Magic. And the goal is to help you be that way, too. We want to bridge the gap between what they're doing and what we're not, right? We want to figure out what we can do to get better as a player. So on that note, I want to say thank you to the patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show. It really means a lot to me. You keep the show going. Thank you so much for all that you do. I'm able to hire out the things that I suck at, like show notes and editing and stuff like that, and it's all because of the patrons. So thank you, patrons, so much for your support. And if you are interested in becoming a patron, you can go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. And as a thank you, each and every month I do a giveaway where one random patron is chosen to win some sweet Magic swag, some sweet Magic prizes, some products. And those products and prizes are provided by Paragon City Games, who is the other sponsor of the show. So thank you, Paragon City Games, so much for your support. We definitely look forward to sending out some really cool products soon, as we are in the beginning of August. We're still waiting for everything to clear for July, and then we'll announce the July winner and send out some stuff. So probably in the next episode or two, I'll be announcing the winner, and Paragon City Games and I will be dropping that stuff in the mail. Continuing on the note of getting better, go to deckbuildingmasterclass.com. There I have compiled a free PDF with the best deck building tips available. We had three amazing pros come together to do a fantastic masterclass, and I compiled everything that they said into a PDF that you can download for free. Not only that, but I'll ask you just three questions. When you go there, you'll get like a little quiz that you go through. It's just three questions long, so you can finish it in like 14 seconds or something. And not only will you get the download for free, but you'll also know exactly what you can do next to improve your game. I'll ask you exactly where you are in Magic, and then based on your level, I'll tell you exactly step-by-step what you can do next to improve your game, where you need to be, where you need to go, what you can do right now to get better. So it's a really cool resource. I'm really excited about helping people move along that path, and this is the next step. So deckbuildingmasterclass.com is where you can go for that. Again, three short questions, get a free PDF download, and the next steps for you tailored to your situation. So pretty cool stuff. Anyways, we have a great guest, like I said. So without further ado, let's bring him in, sit down, and talk about Magic. What is up, everybody? I am super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest is 23-year-old freight and logistics manager at a small POS company. He's a casual online gamer who started playing Magic in 2008. He started to play at Meta Games in 2009, which is known for its high-level players. Draft and Australian Highlander were his formats of choice. In 2014, he played at his first Grand Prix, and since then, he's played at 8 Grand Prix with a 3rd place finish at Sydney 2017, a 9th place finish at Sydney 2014, and a near miss at Melbourne 2016. He's excited to play at his first Pro Tour this November. Coming to us from Melbourne, Australia, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Carl Iyer. Carl, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks, Sean.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I'd love to.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Carl. Carl, since you're not on Twitter, we actually have a Pro Tutor Prodigy Facebook group. And that if you're interested, we can add you into there and people can find you that way as opposed to just trying to reach out to you directly. Does that sound cool?
Yeah, that's cool.
Excellent. So we'll get you in the group as your episode gets closer. And if anybody wants to say hello or ask a question, they can tag you in a post there. That will be the way that we do that. So we'd love to learn about our guests a little bit outside of Magic before we do the whole Magic thing. So are you born and raised in Melbourne?
I'm born in Adelaide, but I've grown up all in Melbourne.
And you're there now working. So tell us, is that a point of sale company, POS? Or?
Yeah, that's a point of sale company. We sell the whole solution to people. So touch screens for bars, sort of hospitality area industry.
And let's see, how long have you been doing that? Did you go to uni and then start doing that afterwards? Or tell us a little bit about your schooling.
Well, I finished year 12 and then did games design at uni for a little while, but I wasn't enjoying it very much. So I finished up that, and since then I have been working where I am now.
And we mentioned that you're a casual online gamer. What kind of games?
Just like Dota, Diablo, online. PlayerUnknown right now is probably something I'm playing.
Cool.
But yeah, just casual stuff.
Excellent. Yeah, when I sit down to play a computer game right now, it's probably 95% that I'm going to be playing Overwatch. So that's my online game of choice. So very good. Now, we love to hear the origin story of our guests and dive into how you even got into Magic in the first place. So can you take us back in the day and tell us the story, take us with you, of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards?
Okay. If I recall correctly, it's probably 2007. I just get home from school and I see my older brother Alex playing on the bench. I just get interested real quick. But yeah, I just saw it, picked it up, started playing it, loved it. I love how I could build decks and design it and sort of build my own play.
Yeah, that's neat. So your older brother Alex was playing. And do you remember what that set was? What was your first set?
I'd say the first set I saw was Lauren, but okay. The first set I sort of got into was Shards of Alara.
Nice. And do you have a favorite set since then?
Kind of hard to choose favorites. Mm-hmm. You kind of have cards you like every now and then, but not really holding on to anything.
Okay. And so along the line of the cards, is there a card that stands out as one of your favorite? Because I know there's a bunch, so one of?
Probably Rift Charm.
Ooh, for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And why do you like it?
So it's one red, one green, one white, and it's modal. So you can choose between one of the options, and there's three options. Destroy a non-basic land, create 3/1/1 sapperlings, or prevent all damage from a source. And I found this whilst I was playing Highlander in Australia. And basically what it does is it gives you heaps of options, and in a format where you can play like Skull Clamp and draw extra cards and stuff, or someone's attacking you with a huge lifelink or like a worm coil, or it's just real versatile. And I love that when I get lots of choices from my cards.
Wow. And what set is that from? What's it called again?
Rift's Charm.
Huh.
Really cool. Not sure what set exactly.
I have not heard that one, and I'm trying to look it up so I can see the art, but I have no idea. That's cool. Yeah, modal cards are really neat because they give you that those options, and whenever you give players options, and it's always fun because you could make the wrong choice, and but if you do, then it's a big payoff. And so,
It's from Plane Shift, bit of an old one.
Yeah, man, that's good stuff. Yeah, there it is. Looks good. Nice. Man, it's always fun to hear, the cards and why they like them. And you said that came up as a good player through your Highlander events?
Yeah. So basically when I started, I didn't have much money because I was probably like 16. So I got into an Eternal format because I knew my cards wouldn't rotate. Standard was a bit expensive at the time. Mm-hmm. It was the time of like Jace the Mind Sculptor and stuff like that, when decks could be up to like $800 to get. So I put my money into Highlander, and it paid off quite well for me. But yeah, I just loved looking through old cards on Gatherer, finding the solutions to the problems, basically.
That's neat. So when you started to play Magic, like more competitively, and we started, shifting into that scene, what was an early challenge that you struggled with, but that you eventually overcame?
It's a hard one. Maybe just like, I don't know, like knowing that you can do it is probably the best way to put it. Like, you hear a lot of stories from newer players sort of being unsure in themselves as they play, where you got to commit a lot of the time, and hesitation is will lose you games if you go with it.
How did that affect you?
So, especially because I didn't have much money when I was growing up, when I started playing, so I didn't have much to invest in it. Every game sort of counted. So, for the first couple games, like, or tournaments, like, they're not going to go well. But basically, that just drives you to play more, learn more. And then you just gain confidence as you go, and you get some results, and then you go from there.
Nice. Yeah, it's so true. Those little blocks that we have that we can remove along the way as we are consistent and persistent, and we just, play Magic and get out there and do our best regardless of our, collection or connections. And as, time goes on, both those grow, and we, gain a little confidence and keep moving forward. So that's pretty neat. So I like that. Just get out there and keep playing and starts to come. So as you have developed as a Magic player, who are some of your Magic mentors, either people that you know in person or that you, read their stuff from afar? Who has influenced you as a player?
I'm not much for watching videos. Notable people that I probably played against a lot when I was younger was probably Isaac Egan and Luke Mulcahy. So they've both been on the Pro Tour. Luke's sort of known for being a bit of a wild deck builder playing Bruce. And Isaac's just here in metagames when I was younger, so got a lot of reps in with him.
And what did you learn anything particular from them, or just, you know, got to play a lot of Magic and kind of soak it up?
I never really got like tips from anyone. I kind of just sorted out myself. Not much to like dig into big strategy or anything. Mm-hmm.
And what were some of your Magic milestones that you had, you know, throughout your play history, kind of leading up to your bigger finishes?
So what were my goals going through?
Well, like, can you look back and are there any events that you remember and that you did well maybe, or and said, oh, wow, like I'm getting better as a player, you know?
Okay. So the first big one was probably my first win in a Highlander event.
Okay.
And I won a Mox for winning that. And I think I was just turning 17 at the time. And then since then, I've won two more Moxes in Highlander tournaments.
Oh, wow.
And after the third one, I was pretty feeling confident in my skill. And then about then is when I did my first GP, actually.
Okay.
And that was in the first GP was, I think it was 2014 Melbourne Standard. And I hadn't played a day of Standard at that point. Someone just threw me a deck. I think it was Red White Satyr or Tribal, like Devotion to Red. And I made day two with it, and then I didn't get any sleep and fell apart the second day.
Oh, no.
But what it really showed me was that I was improving, and that if I put the effort in, I could do well. Following that was the 2014 Sydney, in which I came ninth. And that was the first GP I sort of heavily invested in, did a huge amount of playtesting for, and tried to go all the way. And at that point, I knew I was well on my way.
I think it's so neat that you made day two at your first Grand Prix. That's quite an achievement. And then, you know, dove all the way up to ninth, you know, soon after. That's really neat. It's fun to kind of look back and look at those milestones and see how you've grown. And we're definitely going to dive into some of your recent finishes for sure. But it's just so neat to look back and, you know, recognize, oh, hey, you know, I started winning these Highlander events and whatnot. And it's fun to see, you know, see on your way up. So this journey you've had, I'm sure has had ups and downs. It's like every player experiences ups and downs. We would love to dive into two of those moments specifically. The first one being your worst Magic moment. Tell us that story. What happened?
Worst Magic moment. Okay. This one probably came at me twice. So when I started, probably 17, when it was the old, I don't know what it was called before, ELO system, mm-hmm. before Planeswalker points, basically a lot of people would prize split, ID when they paired against you if they didn't want to lose too many points.
Right.
Especially because there was a lot of like high-level players playing at metagames where I was playing. So a lot of people would do that in the finals if they thought they were going to lose. Potentially. And then I think twice it happened, and I didn't know exactly what the rules were regarding prize splitting. And I'm like, I don't know what's happening here. And both times I ended up getting disqualified for like trying to get a prize out of it because I wasn't sure what was happening.
Oh no.
It was pretty bad at the time, and I think my friend Jack was laughing at me. He was just sitting on the couch playing Super Smash Brothers. But it was funny. At the time, I didn't find it very funny.
Yeah, of course not.
And that's probably my worst experience. And it happened again like 3 weeks later, and I'm like, you need to explain this to me.
So who finally did? Who finally taught you?
I think it was Isaac, actually.
Yeah.
Is the man who ran the store back then.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, what did you learn from that experience? What can you share with us so that we can become better players?
Learn the rules. Yeah. They're all important. And if you don't know, just call a judge. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to help you out.
So in that situation, just call a judge and ask, okay, what happens if we draw or something like that, and just kind of walk through it and figure it out.
Yeah, even if you have the slightest bit of hesitation, just because you're not sure what's going on, it's unfamiliar, just call a judge. They're there to help.
Man, that's rough. Now, the flip side, obviously, are highs. So what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
Yeah, I'd probably say it's my recent top three finish at the GP.
Excellent. Tell us about that. How did that feel?
That was amazing. Day one was incredible. We sort of sat down, opened our pool, and just said, if we don't A1 this, we're going to be upset. the pool I had was like blue, green, black, just like good stuff. All the I had three trials and four cartouches.
Ooh, that's good.
That was good. And then I had like the Scarab enchantment that makes 1/1s.
Yes.
And then probably like 12 cards that put counters on stuff.
Wow, that's good stuff.
So my deck was silly. And then day two was kind of a shamble. We got like an average bull and then started 1-2, and then we needed to win out. But we got there, and then I just couldn't believe it. I'd been in that situation before, and it sometimes falls apart. And you just got to have hope at that point. But it came together this time, and I was so happy.
That's excellent. That's really – oh, man. So leading up to the event, I'd love to figure out, what did you do? How did you prepare? What did your preparation for that tournament look like?
It probably not as much as I had for previous ones. But I'd say what I did have was we had a lot of team events. Isaac Eason, who's a pretty good guy in the community, started a team challenge sort of warm-up event. Like every week there would be events on just for team matches in Sealed. And that was probably the best way for us to practice. I think we got like four of those in before the event.
That's excellent. What kind of challenges were they?
So they're just like team events, team Sealed. So okay. Same as the GP. And then they build up, and then the winning team at the end got free entry into the GP. But yeah, the best part about that was just learning to play as a team. Like even going into day two, we were super tired. And I don't think we would have got there if we weren't working as a team. The best part is you just turn, like if you have any problems, you just turn to your side. And what that means is as long as your team is working together, you don't make mistakes anymore. Similar to the way pros do. Like the people who are the best don't make mistakes. That's just what's going on. But when you have someone beside you who can also help you not make mistakes, you can bridge that gap a lot easier.
Excellent. Man, that's so exciting, you know, that you're able to do that with your team and do so well, and that's incredible. I haven't done any team events yet on a competitive level, so I'm excited to try those out, and I'm glad to see that Wizards is doing more and more of those. Was this your first big team event, or?
I'd played it once in the past, and I think I don't know what it was. I've done like a two-headed, but nothing serious.
Right.
This was like the biggest, the one thing I've taken serious as a team event, and just putting in the reps with the team is such a big advantage. Like, if everyone understands what your card choices are, like how you evaluate cards going into it, you're going to be able to like finish deck construction in like half an hour, and then have half an hour to sit there just like debating stuff, trying to tweak it perfectly.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a good position to find yourself, sounds like. So other than this event, which you did very well at, what format is one of your better formats when it comes to competitive events?
Last one I knew exceptionally well, I would say, I think it's M14, which had Convoke in it.
So like standard or?
Oh, right. You mean format. Format. I'd probably say limited.
Okay.
Leaning towards limited.
So when you have like a single, like your own limited event coming up, how do you prepare for that? What does that look like?
Mainly it's just learning the cards, putting the reps in. If before a GP, I'll probably go through card evaluation in pick order. I've done that a few times just with some local guys that also are practicing before these events. Uh-huh. But besides that, just talking is the best way to do it. Understanding where everyone thinks what everyone thinks is the best card will get you a lot closer to where cards actually are than just using your own experience.
I think it's really crucial to, like you said, to have those other people, you know, to talk to, because you don't play Magic in a vacuum. And I think it's very important to draw on the knowledge of others. So I think it's really profound that you shared that. As you've played Magic against, you know, hundreds of different people and you've just seen thousands of lines of play. What's the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I'd probably say positioning. There's a lot of inexperienced players. I see this a lot. They don't understand where their position at any point in the game is.
Okay.
So what I mean is, like, their opponent might be out of cards or something, but they're still not in a position to wait because of that. Or just people don't take the initiative is, I think, what I'm trying to say. People don't see their opportunities enough. Sometimes you just need to risk it. Sometimes you need to attack your 2-2 into their, like, 3-3, even though you don't have any other play, so that you could potentially rip lightning bolt the next turn or something obscure.
Mm-hmm. So how can we get better at that? How can we see what our options are and get better at, you know, taking initiative?
I don't know. I think it's more about understanding what is happening at any given point.
Okay.
Some people have a lot of trouble just switching between being the aggressor and being on defense, or especially people playing aggro decks or aggressive decks don't ever switch to a slower standpoint, even though sometimes it might be the correct move.
Yeah, and that kind of falls on the initiative part, knowing when to take it and then knowing when not to take the initiative. And so it looks like recognizing that. How do you go about, you know, recognizing that?
It's kind of hard to describe. It's kind of a three-dimensional sort of.
For sure.
Yeah. But it's like sometimes you need to get in there even though it's not, like, the best for you, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes it's not that profitable, but sometimes that's your way out of a match. Mm-hmm. Like, having it go a bit longer is not going to be profitable. Maybe you need to have two of your dudes die, kill one of their dude, and then deal some damage just so that you can potentially get there later.
Yeah, like you said, it's tough to describe because not like we can say, well, you know, if they have one creature and you have two, then we can't just do that. Every board state is so unique, and that's part of what makes Magic awesome, you know, but just... Yeah, as you play, be cognizant of that. You know, ask yourself every turn, am I the aggressor or does something happen last turn that makes me not be? And just, you know, work that muscle and talk with people. We've talked about, you know, how leaning on others and pooling knowledge is a great way to, you know, get better at Magic so far already. And so you can do that with, you know, board states and situations that you're in. Ask others, what would you have done there? You know, if you're not with others, if you're online, take a screenshot or whatever. If you're not with others, and describe what was going on at the time and say, you know, what would you have done? Talk about it and say, okay, here's what I did. I attacked or I didn't attack or whatever. Yeah, I think it's a muscle and it's hard to describe, but as you get in there and practice and put it forefront in your mind, then you can improve, you know, that skill of knowing whether or not you're the aggressor or not. So,
yeah.
So, Kara, what is an aspect of Magic that you have been able to apply to other areas of life? Like something that you learned from Magic that you use elsewhere?
Probably critical assessment is probably the best way to put it. Just always knowing that you can do better. To put it simply, like every time you play, you should be able to write down a bunch of mistakes at any point. Even when you think you're playing perfectly, you can work out something that you can improve. Give it it could be guessing what's in your opponent's hand or playing tighter, playing more conservative, just knowing what colors they're playing, what they're on, playing around certain cards. Magic's a complicated game and I don't think anyone's going to be playing it perfectly.
No, I don't think so. So on that note, what are you working on? What are some of the shortcomings that you recognize in yourself that you're working on as a Magic player?
I'd say I play less than I used to, and I get a little bit sloppy sometimes. And I just, like, zone out for a second or I miss something tiny. So I think what I'm working on is just trying to shore up my faults, making sure I'm focused at every point and not missing things.
Good stuff. And on a larger scale, what have you learned about yourself from playing Magic?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's more, maybe I think it's the way I learn. It's probably the way I'd put it. Mm-hmm. I think I learn by doing things more than I do by reading things or watching things. I don't know how can I apply that elsewhere, though.
Well, no, I mean, even just knowing that, getting that realization about yourself, like, that's really useful, you know, because you might have learned that from Magic, but now you know in any other given situation, it's like, hey, just let me get in there and do it. You know, you might be able to absorb a little by reading or seeing, like you said, but you really learn by doing. And I think it's great how, you know, this game that we all love to play can give us insights not only into others, but into ourselves. I think that's really neat. So you learn by doing. That's awesome. So how many pro points do you have right now?
I think I have five.
And that's off of your most recent finish, obviously. So, and you are queued for Pro Tour, which one? In November, you said?
Albuquerque.
Okay. Excellent. Nice. That's going to be the Ixalan one. Is that right?
Yeah, the one with the dragons, I believe, is the right one.
Dragon? The one with the dinosaurs?
Dinosaurs, that's
yeah,
right.
Come on, yeah, dude. Yeah.
Dinosaurs and pirates? Is that it?
Dude, yes. Like, that's going to be the coolest set, I think, ever.
Someone told me about it. I just couldn't believe it.
Oh, man. I was freaking out. When I saw the picture, I was like, post this on every social media channel I have. Like, this is amazing. Like, it looks so cool. Anyways, that's cool. Have you been to the States before?
Once. I think I was probably 13 at the time, and I went to Chicago, saw some relatives, and then after that, I went to Sweden.
Okay.
Similar relatives, but yeah.
Now you get to go to lovely New Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I have not, I've only driven through there, so I'm not exactly sure what's out there, but I hope there's exciting things for you to to do. And this is going to be your first Pro Tour, right?
Yeah, this is going to be my first Pro Tour. Okay.
So how are you going to prepare? Like, we'd love to hear, you know, what does that look like? You know, someone who qualifies for the first Pro Tour, I'm assuming you're not on one of those big super teams. So what does it look like? Like, you know, how do you start preparing? How do you start networking? What do you do?
You kind of just group with who you know, really. You find out who else is going from your area and try a schedule around that. Similar to like you would for a team event, you pull some people together and then try and make it work. I'm going to be looking to have a share house leading up to it probably the week before. And I'll probably be at the GP Phoenix beforehand as well.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably just try hit it real hard. Like, you don't go to the Pro Tour every weekend, right?
Right. So do you have any of the players identified that you want to, you know, link up with and practice as we get closer?
Jaren, who was on my team for Sydney, will be going with me. And then apart from that, I'm still looking to see who's going to join us.
Okay, excellent. And that's exciting. It's fun. And then, with five pro points this season, probably won't be making silver. But, I mean, going to a pro tour gets you set up at least on a good footing. So are there plans in the works of maybe getting silver next season?
Well, I'm also going to be doing two GPs afterwards as well. I'm going to make a big month out of it.
Nice.
So I'm going to play a heap of Magic, hopefully do well, potentially qualify for another one.
Yes. Man, that is going to be exciting. What awesome fall you're going to have.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
That's cool. That is really, really cool. So, you know, when you travel, and especially now that you're going to be traveling, you know, internationally and whatnot, what do you take with you? What is in your tournament bag?
Well, I don't know, going overseas, usually when I go to a GP, I just bring a backpack with some clothes, a deck box, some sleeves, and that's it. I don't think you want to carry much. You want to travel light. You just want to make sure you're eating well and well-fed, keep your fluids up. Basically, just look after yourself and focus on the main event. That's my advice.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about that. For long days, what are some tournament day tips that you have for us? Like, what do you do to keep focused through a long day of Magic, like a Grand Prix?
Like I said, keep hydrated, eat, try get some sleep. It's not always possible, but try. Not on the day. I mean, like, not during the event, but
right. The
night before, don't stay up all night drinking or whatever. Maybe just don't muck around on the day. Try not to focus much on anything besides the event. But between rounds, if you don't need to be focusing on it, just relax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're pent up the entire day. You're just going to wear yourself out.
What do you do between rounds? Because I know that, different things work for different people. And so it's just fun to hear what does work for people so that other people can try it out and find what works for them. So, you know, what do you do between rounds of a long day?
Usually I just go ask people how they'd get on.
Yeah.
Just network a bit, say hello, that sort of thing. Maybe just sit down if it's nearing the end of the day when I'm feeling a bit tired.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's so neat to hear what people do. Some people, you know, play other games. Some people get out and get some air. Some people call someone and talk about stuff completely non-magic related. Other people want to keep their mind magic related. So they, you know, just dissect the last round or talk with people. Like, so it's really interesting to hear. So people listen to music and it's just fun. It's fun to see what people do between rounds. And because then, you know, we have ideas of, hey, this one person tried this and, you know, I'll try it too. And we get to see what works for us. So that's excellent. That's really excellent. Now, do you do anything on a daily basis that you feel helps you get better at magic, whether it's magic related or not? But do you have any daily habits you feel lead to your success?
I don't know. I'd say just casual gaming is good. It helps you think. You kind of get the strategic mindset. It's probably the way I'd put it. Similar to like people who play chess or something, you start to understand basic principles. You can't learn everything through the game.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the way I'd put it.
Yeah, that's neat because there are those other lessons, those parallels that you can draw and apply to magic, just like we talked about things that you learn from magic that you apply somewhere else. So yeah, playing other games and just kind of being well-rounded definitely contributes. So when you are keeping up on what's happening with magic, what are some magic-related resources that you turn to?
Probably say, I think, what's it called? Top 8?
Okay.
Top 8 deck lists is probably what I'd use if I'm working towards like a modern GP or a standard GP. That's probably where I'd pull a lot of my lists from. Most of the articles, if I'm reading, are probably Channel Fireballs. But apart from that, I don't really use that many resources, to be honest with you.
Those are good ones there. So is it MTG Top 8 or is it Top 8 Deck List? You go there just for the deck list to kind of see what's been doing well?
I think it's MTG Top 8 is the one I use. Cool. Yep.
Yeah, they have tournament reports pretty much, so you get to see what decks did well. And
yeah, you just see what's trending and then try to tweak it for what you think your meta is, basically.
Now, what would you say is your best format?
Are we including Eternal formats?
Yes, we are. Any format, what's your best?
I'd say I'm probably the best at Highlander.
Okay, excellent.
Like, just on like a general like scale. Yeah. I suppose it's very hard to say you're the best at like one of the current formats. Like, I mean, like saying you're the best at standard or drafts a bit mute. But when I can say I'm probably the best at, like, I think I'm probably the best at Highlander on the scale, and that's probably just because less people play.
Got it. Now, in the intro, we mentioned that Australian Highlander was your format of choice. Is that significant? Is there a difference between Australian Highlander and other Highlanders?
Yes. So you don't actually get a commander and you have 20 health still.
Okay.
And we also have a points list. So basically power, so like Moxes and stuff like that, or cards that we think are worth a bit more than the regular cards, are assigned a point value. And you can have up to 7 points in your deck. And that's sort of the way it balances the format. Okay. And as per usual, just one of any card as per normal Highlander.
Got it. So it's I think I've heard a 7-point singleton, you know, format or whatever. And so that makes sense. Excellent. So let's say, let's dive into that since that's, you know, your cup of tea. What would you say to a new Highlander player, someone who's coming in, and what should they focus on? And what are some common pitfalls? Like, talk to us like we're beginner Highlander players. What advice would you give?
That's a good question. Lately, there's been a lot of net decking, so I don't know how that translates to it. But basically, I'd say look through old cards. There's heaps out there. There's so many. There's always stuff hidden that solves particular problems. Like I said, Rith's Charm, just being versatile in a format where people play heaps of one-offs can be super relevant. A card that can destroy a non-basic land or put threats out there is significant, especially when people are playing like Library of Alexandria or Caracas or all number of lands that can crush you. Or they might be playing like a red or like a blue black deck. It might not have many sweepers, or just be flexible is probably what I'd say. And do your research.
How so? What are we researching?
Just sort of like work out where everyone's at.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So find out what people are playing and try build against them. It's hard to describe, especially for an Eternal format.
How far, so you can use any card in the history of Magic, or are there, because you have the point system?
Yep. So I think it has the vintage ban list.
Okay.
Well, I don't know which format it has. But yeah, so all the cards that shouldn't ever be played are banned, but power's still good.
Okay.
So sort of main strategy is probably like green, white, red, aggro, Bant, mid-range, blue-black control, blue-red, moon, that sort of stuff. And it comes out looking a bit more like cube than regular Highlander.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, it comes out rather aggressive.
And so those strategies you just shared with us, those tend to be like good, like winning strategies, you said? Archetypes?
Yeah, they're winning strategies. There's combo decks that fly around too, like blue-black Time Vault's probably a big one. There's some Storm decks running around. But the format's pretty open, like this Talarian Academy decks, Artifact decks. Mm-hmm. It's all pretty reasonable, especially with one-offs. It's kind of every game's going to come out a bit differently, I'd say. So it probably levels it out a bit more than usual.
And how big are the Highlander events that you go to out there?
Sort of trailed off a bit from them lately. Anywhere between like 20 to 40 players for a big event, I'd say. I've seen as big as like 60 at a GP before.
And they're 1v1 matches, right?
Yeah, they're just 1v1 matches.
Nice. That's pretty neat. It's fun to hear about other formats that people take competitive and can win some sweet prizes. I mean, come on, winning Moxie, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. So are those the coolest things that you've, won or done out of Highlanders, getting those boxes?
Yeah, they're definitely the big takeaways.
Yeah, that's kind of the cream, I think. That is pretty neat. Is your playgroup pretty plugged into that format, or are you kind of the one that just kind of does that?
My playgroup's kind of trailed off a bit lately. Mm-hmm. So originally it was a lot of Highlander players, and that group's sort of fallen off, especially since our local gaming store closed.
Oh,
so
no.
That's metagames. Yeah, it happens. Stores need to make money, right? They can't just stay open forever. Right. I understand that. And it felt a lot like a clubhouse, maybe. Just like a... like the friend list, like your friend's place. Mm-hmm. It's probably had felt like mm-hmm. they had a Nintendo 64 set up there with Super Smash Bros on it. It would play that in between draft rounds, and it was great.
Yeah.
But like all good things come to an end, I guess.
That stinks though. Where are you playing now?
Now I just play at my local store. I'm probably playing a bit less than I used to, and I'd say that's probably why. Right now, in Melbourne, I don't grind PPTQs very much. Mm-hmm. I just focus on the big events. I feel like that's where my time gets rewarded the most. I'd prefer to play a lot in a huge burst than to play just on weekends and try and grind it.
Okay. Are you a big Moto player? Do you get online much?
No, but I've been meaning to get back on there.
Yeah.
I hate the interface. It doesn't feel the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to as well, play more online just because it's so convenient. And at least I get on and the Prodigies in the Pro Tutor Facebook group, we do a sealed league every set, so now with Hours of Devastation coming out, I'll probably, hop on and do another league. But every time a new set comes out, I'm like, this is it. I'm going to get on there and I'm going to draft. It's going to be great. And then I never do. And it's like, oh, so I do need to get on there. Play some more. So good stuff, man. So we talked a little bit about where you're going to be in the fall, but what other events do you have coming up maybe between now and then? Like, where can we see you in the future?
That's interesting. Australia's kind of, we only get 2 GPs a year. Mm-hmm. So I don't get that much leg time or room to play throughout the year. And seeing as I'm not grinding PPTQs, I don't really get much more than that, apart from the pro GPs. I'll probably go for the World Magic Cup qualifier.
Nice. That'd be fun.
I think that's coming up in September. That's probably the next big thing. But after that's the Pro Tour, of course, and then probably just a random GP the following year.
Cool. Excellent. That's going to be so fun. We love watching past guests go on to do great things. So that'll be fun to, you know, hopefully make it at the World Magic Cup qualifier, and we'll see you on that stage. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
So as we kind of pull into the home stretch here, I want to remind the prodigies that if you want to connect with Carl, you can do so in the Facebook group. We're going to slide him in there, and you can ask him a question, tag him in the post, and that's how you can get a hold of him. So, Carl, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something that you already said that you want to emphasize, or something new you want to do with us here at the end?
Probably just networking, honestly. Find the best players in your community. Talk to them. They all have ways they play and ways they see cards. Just talking to them and learning their experiences and how they evaluate things is a great tool.
And Carl, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your experiences with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, Sean. Loved being here.
Carl, thank you so much for coming on to the show and making episode 223 an amazing, amazing addition to the MTG Pro Tutor podcast. Thank you so much. Prodigies, as you know, you can get these show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Carl Eyre. So Carl with a K, Eyre. So go check them out. We'll have links in the show notes to the resources that were mentioned. And before I sign off, I want to remind you about the Deck Building Masterclass. So go to deckbuildingmasterclass.com. And even if you already have this, I know plenty of people have already downloaded the PDF, you can still go through and take the little quiz and find out exactly what you need to do next to up your game, okay? So deckbuildingmasterclass.com, you get a free PDF download, which compiles the best tips that pro players shared with you. They really pulled out all the stops and put their brains together, and we have some really amazing deck building tips for you. So deckbuildingmasterclass.com is where you can go for that. So check it out. Also, thank you again to the patrons at Paragon City Games. Your support of the show means the world and keeps things going. I really do appreciate it. And look forward to announcing the winner of the July giveaway probably in another two episodes or so. So thank you so much. Stay tuned. I know that we have Grand Prix in Minneapolis this weekend, so catch the coverage of that if you can't make it out there yourself. And I definitely look forward to having another Prodigy turned guest on the show. So hopefully one of you listening right now, go to GP Minneapolis and make the top eight. Wouldn't that be sweet? Can't wait to have you on and feature your story. Thanks so much for spending time with me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. Until next time, I am Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.